We are continuing in Hebrews chapter 11. We've got two more sessions in 11. Now, let me see if I can get my date straight. Help me out. Next week, is that the Thanksgiving Sunday? So we won't be meeting next week. Is that right?
No, we will.
We will? Okay. We're just doing that at Christmas?
Right.
Okay. All right. Good. Great. Well, next week, then, we get to finish up Hebrews chapter 11. By the way, just so you don't miss it, if you happen to be around the corner when announcements come, or you choose to sleep during the announcement time or whatever, we do have three baptisms today, so you might start preparing yourself for a schedule. After we get done in here, we'll go up to the other building and do that. So be aware of that. Make time for that. And so on. So we've got a couple more, one more week after this one in chapter 11, and then we'll move over into chapter 12 and 13 and begin wrapping up the book of Hebrews. To be very direct, I don't have a plan after Hebrews yet. That plan could be very varied, very, very different. It could mean that I take a short break and somebody else teaches for a bit. That's something that I'll be talking with the leadership about. Not that I'm wanting to do that, but every once in a while, it's just a good idea to kind of mix things up. So we'll be talking about that a little bit at an elders meeting tomorrow night. Don't know that there's any probability or likelihood that we might do a little bit of that moving around. Could. But if I'm here, I don't know. I haven't plotted out by Sunday, but we're looking somewhere in January. We're going to need to be thinking about what do we want to do next. And I don't have a specific plan. I was visiting with somebody a while back about some things in Ephesians, and it made me wonder if it was time to go back there again. But that's probably like watching another John Wayne rerun that you like so much that you still don't get much out of it. So it may be that I just like Ephesians so much. So anyway, if you've got any inputs to that, I welcome hearing about it. You can quickly move somewhere I'm not comfortable. And so I might say, nah, we're not going to do that. But anyway, if you have some inputs there, I certainly welcome those and we'll see where it goes. I did get, I don't want to say pushed, but my first inclination when we did Daniel was, I'm not ready for that. But we did it anyway, and I hope it worked out okay. I think it did. So you might find out that I need you to stretch me. So we'll just take it as it comes. Today we're going to be looking at verses 30 through 35a. There is a distinction between the last half of 35 and the examples in the rest of the chapter that I kind of want to save and just deal with and really even highlight in a pretty big way. In my study of Hebrews chapter 11, there's two things that really hit me, I guess is the right word, have a big impact on me. One's 11:6. I still go back to that verse. It's still foundational in so many ways. Without faith, it's impossible to please him, for he who comes to God must believe that he is, and he is a rewarder of those who seek him. If we're not out there expecting that God is going to do things in our lives that are rewarding to us, we can't please God, because that's part of who he is and what he does, and we're just denying a piece of that. Now, what are those things gets kind of interesting, and the piece of Hebrews I'm saving kind of fills in some of those gaps, because it's some kind of backward sounding words compared to what we would normally expect in this life as a result of faith. So I'm going to save that for next time. Today we're going to talk about 30 through 35a. So if somebody can be so disciplined as to stop reading halfway through verse 35, if somebody would read 30 through 35a, I would appreciate that.
The walls of Jericho fell down after they had been encircled for 7 days. By faith, Rahab the prostitute did not perish with those who were disobedient, because she had given a friendly welcome to the spies. And what more shall I say? for time would fail me to tell of Gideon, Barak, Samson, Jephthah, of David and Samuel and the prophets. Did I go too far?
No, half of 35.
Oh, 35, okay. Who through faith conquered kingdoms, enforced justice, obtained promises, stopped the mouths of lions, quenched the power of fire, escaped the edge of the sword, were made strong out of weakness, became mighty in war, put foreign armies to flight. Women received back their dead by resurrection.
Okay, and that's where I want to stop. We'll deal with the others next time. You know, these are the really encouraging words in Hebrews, aren't they? I mean, these verses deal with that broad brush stroke that the author brings into it at the end here, goes saying, okay, here's a couple other examples, and boy, here's all this stuff. I mean, the history, particularly in the Old Testament era, is just littered with God doing things in response to people's faith that are extraordinary, that are miracles, that are beyond what you would normally expect to occur with the principles that I teach so much in physics going into play. I mean, he just defies those and defies the way that men work in the world. So we start out with Joshua. We see there, Joshua, however you want to say that by faith the walls of Jericho fell down after they had been encircled for 7 days. Now, you all have heard this story a lot of times, haven't you? I mean, you know about it, but we got to go back. Well, I went back and found details that I went, this is important, and we need to recognize. So let's go back to Joshua chapter 5, and I know this is a long passage, but it'll take less time to read it than if I were to tell it. So let's just read Joshua 5:13 through the end of chapter 6. Yeah, Joshua 5, verse 13, almost the end of chapter 13 through chapter 6.
5:13.
All of
chapter 6?
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's a little ways.
When Joshua was by Jericho, he lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, a man was standing before him with his drawn sword in his hand. And Joshua went to him and said to him, are you for us or for our adversaries? And he said, no, but I am the commander of the army of the Lord. Now I have come. And Joshua fell on his face to the earth and worshipped and said to him, what does my Lord say to his servant? And the commander of the Lord's army said to Joshua, take off your sandals from your feet, for the place where you're standing is holy. And Joshua did so. Now Jericho was shut up inside and outside because of the people of Israel. None went out and none came in. And the Lord said to Joshua, see, I have given Jericho into your hand with its king and mighty men of valor. You shall march around the city, all the men of war going around the city once. Thus shall you do for 6 days. 7 priests shall bear 7 trumpets of ram's horns before the ark. On the 7th day you shall march around the city 7 times, and the priests shall blow the trumpets. And when they make a long blast with the ram's horn, when you hear the sound of the trumpet, then all the people shall shout with a great shout, and the wall of the city will fall down flat, and the people shall go up, every one straight before him. So Joshua the son of Nun called the priests and said to them, take up the Ark of the Covenant, and let 7 priests bear 7 trumpets of ram's horns before the ark of the Lord. And he said to the people, go forward, march around the city, and let the armed men pass on before the ark of the Lord. And just as Joshua had commanded the people, the 7 priests bearing the 7 trumpets of ram's horns before the Lord went forward, blowing the trumpets, with the ark of the covenant of the Lord following them. The armed men were walking before the priests who were blowing the trumpets, and the rear guard was walking after the ark while the trumpets blew continually. But Joshua commanded the people, you shall not shout or make your voice heard Neither shall word go out of your mouth until the day I tell you to shout. Then you shall shout. So he caused the ark of the Lord to circle the city, going about it once. And they came into the camp and spent the night in the camp. Then Joshua rose early in the morning, and the priests took up the ark of the Lord. And the seven priests, bearing the seven trumpets of ram's horns, before the ark of the Lord walked on, and they blew the trumpets continually. And the armed men were walking before them, and the rear guard was walking after the ark of the Lord, while the trumpets blew continually. And the second day they marched around the city once, and returned into the camp. So they did for 6 days. On the seventh day they rose early at the dawn of the day and marched around the city in the same manner 7 times. It was only on that day that they marched around the city 7 times. And at the 7th time, when the priests had blown the trumpets, Joshua said to the people, "Shout, for the Lord has given you the city, and the city and all that is within it shall be devoted to the Lord for destruction. Only Rahab the prostitute and all who are with her in her house shall live, because she hid the messengers whom we sent. But you keep yourselves from the things devoted to destruction, lest when you have devoted them, you take any of the devoted things and make the camp of Israel a thing for destruction and bring trouble upon it. But all silver and gold and every vessel of bronze and iron are holy to the Lord. They shall go into the treasury of the Lord." So the people shouted and the trumpets were blown. As soon as the people heard the sound of the trumpet, the people shouted a great shout, and the wall fell down flat, so that the people went up into the city, every man straight before him, and they captured the city. Then they devoted all in the city to destruction, both men and women, young and old, oxen, sheep, and donkeys, with the edge of the sword. But to the 2 men who had spied out the land, Joshua said, "Go into the prostitute's house and bring out from there the woman and all who belong to you, as you swore to her." So the young men who had been spies went in and brought out Rahab and her father and mother and brothers and all who belonged to her. And they brought out her relatives and put them outside the camp of Israel. And they burned the city with fire, everything in it. Only the silver and gold and the vessels of bronze and of iron they put into the treasury of the house of the Lord. But Rahab the prostitute and her father's household and all who belonged to her, Joshua saved alive. And she has lived in Israel to this day, because she hid the messengers whom Joshua sent to spy out Jericho. Joshua laid an oath on them at that time, saying, "Cursed before the Lord be the man who rises up and rebuilds this city, Jericho. At the cost of his firstborn shall he lay its foundation. At the cost of his youngest son shall he set up its gates." So the Lord was with Joshua, and his fame was in all the land.
All right. Thanks, Barry. That was a little bit long. Weren't you thankful, just really thankful, when you read verse 14? "Thus the second day they marched around the camp, around the city once, and returned to the camp." In Old Testament typical fashion, we would have heard that 6 more times, wouldn't, or 5 more times, wouldn't we? But the author was kind enough to say they did the same thing for six days. Okay, so weren't you glad that they did it that way instead of having to repeat it all? But, so here we see Jericho defeated. And according to Hebrews 11, verse 30, trying to let my eyes focus back on that. "By faith, the walls of Jericho fell down after they had been encircled for 7 days. We'll get to Rahab the harlot in a minute. But here it says, by faith, those walls fell down. Do you have any argument with that after reading this story? No, I mean, it's clear that you could say maybe by obedience. Don't obedience and faith really go together? I mean, it is faith that allows us to be obedient. Because we believe what God said, we go, "I'm going to follow what he tells me to do." because I believe the promises he's making, I believe that the directions he's giving are correct and right. If we didn't have faith in God, obedience would be a lot more difficult and maybe even wouldn't be justified if faith wasn't justified. So here we see those two kind of tied together. That's not the point I'm trying to make. Go back to chapter 5 for a minute. Let's just start there. Who did Joshua see? What did Joshua describe?
Commander of the Lord's army.
Commander of the Lord's army. There, starting in verse 13. The commander of the Lord's army is what he says he saw. Now, who's the Lord's army in all of this? Is that the people Joshua is going to lead around, marching around the city of Jericho? Well, in a way, but not really. I mean, this is an unseen army. Kind of reminds you of Elisha, doesn't it? When Elisha was, the city was bottled up, and the servant goes, oh, it's going to be terrible. And Elisha tells the servant, no, there's more of us than there are of them. And the servant goes, what? You know, there's, and so Elisha prays and says, Lord, let him see. And here's all of God's army just ready, poised to do battle. Normally unseen army ready to do battle with these folks that have Israel all bottled up. God's strength and power is not limited to that which we see, is it? But in this moment, Joshua gets to see the captain of the Lord's army. How does Joshua respond? Falls on his face. Yeah, Joshua got it right, didn't he? You know, you hear about these people that claim encounters with God. This is the typical response if you see some encounter with an angel or somebody who truly is spiritually representing God or Christ himself or whatever. When people understand who it is they're dealing with, they tend to not be quite so flamboyant as they'll tell you in their accounts of how they interacted with God. This is a typical response. Falling down as though dead would be another typical response. So anyway, here's Joshua. He falls on his face and he says, what do you have for me? And what's the answer?
Take off your sandals, you're standing on holy ground.
Is that what he says to Joshua?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He did? Okay. Sorry, I read by that in the speed in which I was headed for the next piece. What else?
I've given Jericho into your hand.
Yeah, and what's the tense on that?
Past tense.
Isn't that so typical of how God works with us? Everything's already done, you just haven't experienced it yet. You know, He chose in Ephesians, we were chosen in him before the foundation of the world. We just hadn't experienced it yet till we got around to the time in which we experienced it. Isn't heaven a certainty? Yes. Isn't your salvation done? Well, we get to experience that a little bit, but the real experience comes at the rapture, at judgment time, at those various times when God is revealed, and at that point it says we are glorified. It means the glory of what God has done is shown. It's revealed the truth of who we are. And so here is this captain of the army saying, we have given you Jericho. And I guess it was after that he said, then remove your sandals. No, maybe not.
That was before.
Yeah, I'm getting down to part of 6. So, and then he gives the directions, doesn't he? And so Joshua goes back to do those directions. So let's take this a step further. We can say, this is who the person self-revealed, I'm the captain of the Lord's army. Can we go any further with that? Who is it really? Well, we really don't know. But many, in looking at other situations in the scriptures, when we see some of the interactions with Daniel, it appears at times that he's actually dealing with the person of Christ in the Old Testament. Many would say that's the same thing we're seeing here, by the way in which it compares with some of the others. We don't know. We really don't know. And someday maybe we'll get to ask, but you know, all those questions that you say, boy, when I see God, I got to find this out. You know what? I have a funny feeling at that point you won't really care. That won't be the question of the hour. Matter of fact, I think the question of the hour is, why'd you save me? I think that'll be the question of the hour. But anyway, So here's Joshua, and he gets these instructions. And so in verse 6, notice where he starts. So Joshua, the son of Nun, I'm in 6:6, called who?
The priest.
Yeah, he started with the Ark of the Covenant. And he starts laying out the instructions. And he puts the people together, and he says, this is what we're going to do. And how did they respond?
They did it.
So who has to exercise faith in order for this thing to work?
The people.
Joshua exercises his faith. He takes it to the priests. The priests exercise their faith. They don't fight back and go, this is dumb. You know, if you really stop and look at this, this is a very, very, very bizarre battle plan, isn't it? Can you imagine how different it would look today if, even with our modern technology, we wanted to take a city like Jericho? I mean, you'd have all these things planned, and you'd want to make sure none of your soldiers died. You know, you'd have all this intricate battle plan put together. This one's really pretty simple. Let's go take a trip around the city. Now, it was a ways around the city. I didn't look all that up. That's not the details I'm trying to get into now. Some of you may have some of that, and feel free to bring it forward if you want. But so for 6 days, they marched around the city one time, right? Were they making a lot of noise?
No.
Just the trumpets. And Joshua told the people, don't make a sound. It's interesting, you know, listening to things like the royals and their run for the pennant that unfortunately for us came up a game short. But, you know, the announcers several different times in some of the games leading up and during that said, well, we'll just, in a moment, you'll hear the crowd's cheers, and by their cheers, you're going to know what happened. And isn't that the truth? I mean, that noise fills in. People just make noise. That's just how we are. If you don't have somebody up front with a microphone or a commanding voice, you all will just start talking. I will. Everybody does. It just, this cacophony of noise begins. But Joshua says, silence. Can you imagine what that's like being in the city? You know, first of all, in a little bit, we're going to find out that the people were a little scared of him when we look at this next little bit, which I need to get onto. But so they were concerned. They'd already heard rumors about what's going on about these people that have marched across the countryside, spent 40 years wandering around, and are now on the move. So there was a little bit of concern about that. But, you know, it kind of had to do, wouldn't it have to bring a lot of wonder in, because these folks were used to the normal battle plans. What are they doing? I mean, they're just blowing horns and marching around. Now, it's probably a pretty fabulous show in one sense, because they were probably in the millions, at least more than a million people marching around a city. Makes you wonder if they weren't running over them, if the front of the army didn't start running over the back of the army by the time they got around, or the people's. But nonetheless, it would have had to have been quite a curious thing. And so by the time they've done it 6 times, wouldn't you kind of be, okay, well, I guess we're going to do it again today. Wonder what they're going to do tomorrow. Watch them do it today. And then when they start going around 7 times, it's kind of like, okay, well, this is different. But nonetheless, you know, this is what happened. Joshua also gave some pretty explicit instructions about what to do when they took the city. And what were those instructions?
Get the silver and gold, but don't take things that would defile.
Yeah, we're going to take silver and gold, and the rest of it, it's going to be
destroyed,
including men, women, and children,
animals.
Crops. And after they got the destruction done, of course, they marched Rahab and her family and out, and then what did they do?
Burned
it. That just probably wasn't a real pleasant experience, was it? That would have been hard to do, even with God giving them the run of Jericho, even with God having already said it's done, it's just, you just have to experience it. That would be hard. Did the people do it?
Yeah.
Well, we'll find out if we kept reading. We're not going to go through all of Joshua. There's one family that decided that there was a few things in there just too valuable to let go of, so they carted them home. And they had their own little testimony to God before they were done that's recorded in scriptures about his wrath. So we see this exercise of faith on the part of the people to go do this, to march around Jericho and to do those things. There's a lot of opportunities in this passage to see faith. Joshua, when he meets the captain of the army, listens and does it. The priests marching around, the people following the orders, and all the things that are done. And of course, when it's all done, Joshua pronounces a curse on anyone that would rebuild Jericho. And I didn't look up the prophecy, probably should have, but as I recall, that curse is fulfilled later in time. Probably could find it real quick if we wanted to.
Hey, Rick.
Yes.
One question, you mentioned the commander again, which I kind of was going back to there.
Mm-hmm.
To have that level of action or commitment, you know, to fall on your face and to worship him, he was more than just, I think, a commander, you know, like the general or commander or colonel or something.
Here's one piece of evidence that it was a Christophany. The rest of the angels, when we know it's an angel, when the Bible says, here's an angel, right, and he comes and appears to so-and-so, and the person falls in worship, what does the angel do first? Every time. Don't worship me. He saw what happened to Satan.
Right.
You know, don't worship me. We're not going there. That doesn't occur here.
Right.
The other thing that's a little bit telling is this command to take off your shoes for your unholy ground. Well, I missed it when I was studying. That is also a little bit commanding, because what's that remind you of?
Moses.
Whose presence was Moses in?
God's.
That command, you're on holy ground, tends to be reserved for those times. I say tends. As far as I know, in every case, that's a time when the very presence of God is there. So in some fashion, it's very, very likely. I kind of hesitate myself to say, oh, we know, because, you know, we don't know, but it's pretty likely that this is the person of Christ. Or maybe God the Father, but I don't think God the Father ever appeared this way. This seems out of character that he would do anything this man-like to appear as a person. So, thank you. So, we see all these examples of faith going on in here. What had God done to build up their faith? Why would it have been likely that the people wouldn't have talked back or had second thoughts about doing what Joshua said?
Just spent 40 years learning the lesson.
Yeah, I mean, we know what our parents and grandparents did. They said, you want us to do what? It'll never work. We're not strong enough. And then they tried to do it after God said, I'm not going to let you, and so on and so on and so on. And now you spent 40 years waiting on all them to die. It's kind of like, now we're not going to start that road again. We can look at some of those things that God did as punishment, but it wasn't only punishment, was it? We could also go over and look at 1 Peter, where he talks about what testing does for you. We could talk about James, where it talks about your trials and what they do for you. They make you perfect and complete, lacking in nothing. So God has taken the opportunity to build up their faith. And so when we get to Jericho, it's like, okay, now you flunked the last test. Are you ready for this one? And the people have it in a much better situation to realize that God's promises are real and true. You don't see anything recorded. Now, who knows if there was some minor mumbling somewhere, but you don't see anything recorded about the people going, is this really the way God wants to do this? Joshua, is he nuts? Or, you know, is this really how God wants this? You don't see any of that questioning. It's like, okay, let's do it. And so away they go.
Well, and he was their only king, commander, boss, whatever they had at that time.
He was the one, wasn't he? Of course, so was Moses back when we sent out the 12 spies. It kind of looks like maybe though Moses was easily swayed by the 10 as well. Maybe Moses was getting a little tired on his own too. You know, there's a lot of bizarre acts of faith in the scriptures, aren't there? What are some of those? Where God says, do it this way, it's like, okay, and the results are good.
Gideon,
we're going to talk about that a little bit more in a minute. Gideon started with we'll see later, 32,000 soldiers, and against an army much bigger than that, God said, no, you got too many. And he whittles them down, you remember how many?
300.
And so that would be okay if they were armed with bazookas maybe, huh? What were they armed with? Trumpets, lanterns, and pitchers.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go get them. And so anyway, it would have been an interesting way to fight World War II, wouldn't it? Okay, we got way too many people. Everybody go home but this room full. Here's your trumpets, your pitchers, and your lanterns. Let's go fight. Anyway, God works in different ways at different times. What's some other bizarre situations of faith? Let's go through these.
I think of Jonah and Joseph eventually.
Jonah, you say? Yeah, Jonah. Yeah, he wasn't very happy to exercise his faith, though, was he? He knew God would save him. That's why he didn't want to go. He didn't want to save him. So, what else?
Mary and Joseph and Joseph's faith.
Yeah, Joseph responding to what God asked him to do.
Peter's was on and off, but when he jumped out of the boat and walked on water for a little bit, you know.
Peter's lasted for a second or so. Yeah, he did really good. Yeah, there was Peter.
Job
never wavered. And those are some good examples of faith that was strong. What about some bizarre acts that were asked for based on faith?
Noah.
It's never rained here, right? No, yeah, okay, go build an ark. We're going to have a rain and a flood. Oh, and spend, 40 years or whatever building that thing and all the ridicule? So, so there's one. How about another one?
The priests, when they stepped into the Jordan River with the Ark of the Covenant.
Wasn't the Jordan River, the Red Sea. Oh, no, you're talking about the Red Sea, aren't you?
Well, I don't know what I'm talking about. all I know is the priests. The priests were going across. I thought it was the Jordan, but I may be wrong.
And when the Egyptians were following them?
No.
Okay.
They took a step of faith. Of course, at that time, the Jordan was pretty deep and wide.
Yeah. Okay.
And
I'm not remembering what led them to do that, but that's okay.
Yeah. But so the first one was that step of faith. And of course, if everybody's holding, I guess you're all going together.
Package. Nobody wants to turn loose.
I can't remember where the scripture's at.
I'd have to go find that one.
Yeah.
What's some others?
Let him lamb on the doors. Over the doors.
The Passover. That's really bizarre if you really get right down to it. We're gonna kill a lamb, put some blood over here, and we're gonna have this meal. The sacrifice of Isaac. Moses taking the demands to Pharaoh. Go tell Pharaoh to do this. Well, he's going to refuse. Yeah, I know. Go tell Pharaoh. Okay, got it. And Moses was off doing those things. How about lifting up the bronze serpent after they had all the trouble with the snakes because they were whining and complaining? Isn't that pretty amazing? If you look up this bronze serpent, you're going to live. You know, it makes you wonder about those that didn't. You know, the ark, we already mentioned that. The distribution of manna, you can go get enough for today. If you get any extra, it's going to spoil. The one that always still amazes me and the servant girl talking him into it was Nahum. He had the leprosy, and he went and asked the prophet what to do, and he said, go dip 7 times in a river. And he went, well, if you'd asked me to do something, you know, really big, I'd have done it. This finally, this is silly. Off he goes, and the servant girl says, well, if you'd have done something big, why won't you do something simple? So it worked. What's the biggest one of all?
Parting of the Red Sea.
Well, the parting of the Red Sea is pretty big. But the bizarre thing is Jesus on the cross. If you really stop and think about it, in terms of the bizarre things that God did that are related to faith, Jesus going to the cross to save the people doesn't make sense on the front side, does it? You would think Jesus' defeat of Satan would be something other than a crucifixion. And then salvation coming through faith in that act on the cross is pretty amazing. Why does God work in these kinds of ways? Go over to Judges 7:2. Finally found Judges.
And the Lord said to Gideon, "The people who are with you are too many for me to give Midian into their hands, lest Israel become boastful, saying, 'My own power has delivered me.'"
God works in these ways, and I've got other scriptures. We could look at some in Samuel. We could look at 1 Samuel 17. We could look at 1 Corinthians 1. We're not going to take the time. But God makes it clear there's a reason why he works in these ways. And what is that reason?
So they don't think they did it themselves.
You're going to do it in such a way that the only way you could get there from here is if God did it. We're going to eliminate all this braggadociousness that men tend to bring on to how they do things. You know, Barb said some pretty kind words this morning about Dave's preaching, about leadership of the church. And I don't want to turn that into a sermon, but what does that is when the Lord said, "I'm going to build my church." And when the Lord builds the church, it works. When men start thinking they fixed it, did it, owned it, made it happen, it falls apart, because God's not going to let men take credit for what he did. And men shouldn't take credit for anything good that's happened in this church. We ought to be looking and saying, "Jesus Christ, thank you. We're so thankful that in your building your church, you chose to do some building here that results in us being able to be a part of your word being held high, the person of God being held high, and our obedience and faith in you being held high." It just, that's where it's at. And that's how things work out. So, probably enough on that for a minute. I want to take just a minute. Go over to Joshua 2. We got enough time to finish this out. We won't look at all the examples. But Joshua chapter 2.
Gary's reference to that Jordan is in Joshua 4.
Joshua 4?
Oh,
that was part of the conquest.
3 and 4.
Okay, all right.
They set up the stones.
I do. That is coming back to me. Sorry, this old man's memory is getting that way, but it is. Joshua 2, 8 through 11. Now this is, the spies are in Jericho. And they're moving around and have done their thing. And they have taken themselves to this prostitute Rahab's house. So let's read 8 through 11. Anybody.
"Before the men lay down, she came up to them on the roof and said to the men, 'I know that the Lord has given you the land, and that the fear of you has fallen upon us, and that all the inhabitants of the land melt away before you. For we have heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea before you when you came out of Egypt, and what you did to the two kings of the Amorites who were beyond the Jordan, to Sihon and Og, whom you devoted to destruction. And as soon as we heard it, our hearts melted, and there was no spirit left in any man because of you, for the Lord your God, he is God of the heaven in the heavens above and on the earth beneath."
And then she asked for, "Would you please spare me?" Rachel gives quite, Rachel, yeah, gives a, Rachel, right?
Rahab.
I told you I was going to be an old man and having trouble. Rahab gives quite a testimony here, didn't she? I mean, she talks about all the things they've done, like, "We're afraid of you, people." But before she gets done, it's not the people she's afraid of, is it? "We know about your God." As a matter of fact, how far back is she going? Years-wise.
4,400 years.
Well, 40 plus. I don't remember how long they trekked before the 40 started. It took them a while to get out from Egypt and across the countryside. But she's going back to the very beginnings of their departing from Egypt. So they're abuzz about what's been going on with these people walking around out in the wilderness from the time they left Egypt until right then. And she is attributing what's going on to God. That's partly why God works that way. This is also a good testimony about Rahab's faith. You know, we ought to probably hear a little bit about Rahab before we get away from it. We look it over in Hebrews 11 again. We'll finish that out over there. By faith, the walls of Jericho fell down. Verse 31, by faith, Rahab the harlot didn't perish after she welcomed the spies in peace. What else do we know about Rahab the harlot that's significant?
She's in the lineage of Christ.
If you looked at Matthew chapter 1, verse 5, Rahab the harlot is, I believe, in the parentage of Boaz, who was married to Ruth later. And all of this led to King David, which led to Jesus the Christ. So Rahab the harlot is not a no-name character. It isn't just one part of this that she's mentioned in the scriptures. That's mentioned a couple of times. One is there. The other one is in James 2. We got to look at that one. James 2:25. This is a great teaching. Somebody read that verse for us.
And in the same way, was not Rahab the harlot also justified by works when she received the messengers and sent them out by another way?
Rahab was what? That's salvation. Rahab was justified because of her faith, and the way James would say it, and the works she did that showed her faith. And so Rahab is one of our Old Testament saved people as a result of her faith. So if we go back to Hebrews then, in chapter 11, again, verse 32. So we have heard of Jericho and Rahab. And then he says, what more shall I say? If time will fail me if I talk of Gideon, Barak, Samson, Jephthah, and David, and Samuel, and the prophets who by faith conquered kingdoms, performed acts of righteousness, obtained promises, shut the mouths of lions, quenched the power of fire, escaped the edge of the sword from weakness, and were made strong, made mighty in war, put armies to flight, women received back their dead by resurrection. And then we get into the stuff we're not going to talk about this time. So when we look at all that, there's a lot going on there, isn't there? We already talked about Gideon. That's over in Judges 7. We're not going to spend the time reading it, but God directs him to take his army from 32,000 down to 300. Barak, we see over in Judges chapter 4. He is a prophet that is asked to take certain action, and he does. Samson, you know the story of Samson. Eventually he would pray to push down the pillars, and he had his own issues with Delilah, but God blessed him with his prayer for strength. Jephthah is mentioned in Judges. If you wanted to go there, we could. Samuel, David, when he went in front of Goliath, sorry, I'm going to cut this off, but when he went in front of Goliath, what did he tell Goliath? Do you remember? Why did he do that? So that you may know there's a God in Israel. He confronted that godless man, and out of faith, he trusted God to guide those stones. And God certainly did. We're familiar with the mouth of lions and the quenching fire in the book of Daniel. We're familiar with David escaping the sword. We're familiar with Elijah being saved from the sword when Jezebel's after him. We see Samson go from being a weak man to a strong man. And then in verse 35a, women received back their dead. There's two cases of that in the Old Testament. One is the widow of Zarephath. You remember the story there? What prophet are we talking about?
Elijah.
It was Elijah. And it was in the drought that that God led him to call for that occurred. And Elijah, in the middle of this drought, is living with this widow, and her son dies, and Elijah is a part of God using him to bring that son back to life. And we have another one in the Shunammite woman in 2 Kings, receiving a son back to life. This time it is Elisha that brings a child back to life. And so the writer of the book of Hebrews just blasts at these things, reminding the people of the faithful God that they serve. And then next time, we're going to get to hear from him about some other faithful acts that don't seem to be quite so fantastic from an earthly point of view. But this faith is exercised, as you can see in the examples, as James would say, by their obedience, by the things that they did in response to their faith. More time, I would ask you for testimonies of how God has worked through weaknesses. Because you see, what God does is he called these people in their weakness, and he called them to act out of their weakness. They didn't pick up their swords to march around Jericho. They picked up the Ark of the Covenant and the trumpets. And you could go through the other times of the scriptures. God works out of the weakness. It's out of those things that God works so that people will know that he's God. And he works out of weakness in our lives as well. I wish we had time for a discussion, but I used our time up another way. So next time we'll talk about some of the other side of this coin. Let's close in prayer. Lord, despite the fact that I didn't save time for it, open our eyes to how you have worked in our weakness, so that we might, like Paul, say, when I am weak, then I am strong. Lord, let us have our faith rejuvenated. Move us to act out of our faith and to not do so with fear, but with certainty about who you are and how you lead us. It's in Jesus' name we pray. Amen.